This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Choose the most unusual matches. Choose the best of the WWF. Choose wrestling's biggest, smallest, and strongest. Choose Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Roddy Piper's greatest hits, and wrestling's bloopers, bleeps, and body slams. Choose George the Animal Steel. Choose the Ken Patera story. Choose the life and times of Captain Lou Albano. Choose the Hulkamania series. Choose the Ultimate Warrior. And choose Macho Man Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Choose WWF World Tour, Smack and Wacko, and UK Rampages 91, 92 and 93. Choose a journey back in time. Choose Seeing Your Video. It's time for everyone to dust off the VCR and plug it back into the television set as we take a trip into the Coliseum Home Video Vault with your host, Rory McNamara.
And joining me today, a man who has already made one visit to the attic before when we were looking at Super Tape, but now it's my choice. Daniel DeWitt is here. Dan, welcome back to the Senior Video Attic.
Thank you very much, Rory. Thanks for inviting me back up to see the video collection again. It's been a while, but yeah, enjoyable first visit, and yeah, looking forward to seeing what's in the VCR recorder today.
Yeah, I feel like it was about time I got them in some sort of order. I've just been falling around early 90s and new generation tapes over the last few months, but I thought it was time just to put those to one side and dive a little deeper into the box and get back into the mid-80s. And the one I pulled out today, Inside the Steel Cage. Now, I chose this one because, as I'm sure you're all aware, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, as the show goes out, there was a fairly nifty cage match that took place in a promotion. It was liked by everybody. Well, almost everybody anyway. So I thought, why not go back to see how the competition, and as odd as that sounds now, talking about 1986 WWF, handled it. Although, however, Dan, when we talked about doing this a week or so ago, you thought we might be doing a slightly different tape.
Yes, I when you mentioned that we're watching a steel cage video, I do remember one I had in my own collection. I think it's called something along the lines of Greatest Steel Cage Matches, and had sort of Hogan on the blazoned on the front and sort of big red banner. So that's the one I was imagining from, I would guess, probably 89 sort of time. But no, that when then looking for that one on the network, I had to double check with yourself that was which one we were actually watching, because I couldn't find the one I had in picture had in my mind. But and this is an earlier edition. It's like what seems to be one of the very first VHSs they.
Yes, I think this is from the second run of VHSs, the 1986 run, which is one of the main reasons I decided to do this project in the first place, really, because so much of this stuff is completely new to me. As I've said before, anything from 1985 onwards, I know the pay-per-views inside out, back to front, every which way but loose. But anything else is I'm discovering for the first time, really, and I want to go back to as many as the 85, 86 ones as soon as possible. Of course, I'll get to everything eventually, but after 3 or 4 soirees where I'm still a little bit over-familiar in the 90 to 94 sort of range, I thought it was time to take a bit of a step back. Also, I think there was another one. I don't know if it's the one you're talking about, Dan, but it also got a DVD release that I think was also called Greater Steel Cage Matches.
There was. That's not the one I'm talking about. I do remember.
Yeah, it's definitely a different one,
On DVD. It's like a double, it's like a two-disc set. There's a
blue cover, I want to say, without looking it up.
Was it, sorry?
Had a blue cover, I think.
Yeah, it was all blue, yeah. I think I probably had that, which I think that was probably covering more, again, sort of more modern stuff as well. I'm not sure, I can't remember it delving too far back. I think it might have had one of the matches that we're going to see today. I think it might have had something on the Morocco snooker match, but I don't remember there being too many older matches on it. Might have been, and that would have been after the acquisition of the WCW videotape library, so I think it might have even featured at a war.
Oh, it was okay. So it's a bit more recent than I thought. Then okay,
I think so. I want to say it was probably out in 2002-03. So there may be some WCW content on there, because I think it was a two-disc set. But yeah,
Isn't there a match on there between Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty? Am I thinking of the right one?
Yes, I think so, yes. There would have been probably, yeah, from a crossing taping or some sort of taping in 93.
Not on the network or Peacock or so. So if you're listening, guys, there's still only 70 on there. I've got through them all in 5 years' time. If you want to keep the show going, don't look at me because I'll do this through official channels. Well, we'll see about that. But for now, let's get inside the steel cage. You've got to do it like that.
Gorilla Monsoon, and along with the pride of New York City, luscious Johnny V, it is certainly a pleasure to welcome you, Johnny V, to this particular host position on this WWF home video series.
Well, thank you, Monsoon. You know, I understand that the producers at Coliseum Video, you know, requested me personally for this particular cassette. Isn't that right?
John, even these fine people are entitled to make a mistake now and then.
Well, very amusing. You know, I also understand that they called me because this is a cassette unlike no other. When people buy this tape, baby, and keep it and have it forever and ever in their permanent collection, they also get immortalized on video. Yours truly, Johnny V, and that's V, baby, V for value, Monsoon.
Aha, well, if we can, let's return back down to Earth because I want to tell the home video audience that right here is a 1.5-hour response to thousands of fan requests for a single program that deals with Inside the Steel Cage.
Inside the Steel Cage, baby!
So, after what I now call that intro to the 1986 tapes, you know the one, or at least you should, Gorilla Monsoon and Luscious Johnny V, sans scrambled eggs, aujourd'hui, introduce us to today's offering. The latter calls it a cassette like no other. It is 90 minutes of action put together after a specific request from the fans, coming, of course, from a company who always listen to them. Ding. We get a shot of various salt-of-the-earth types putting the cage up, like this was a Dire Straits live long-form video or something. And then we head to Big John Studd versus Andre the Giant. I hope they reinforce the ring, Jess. We join in progress here and get used to that with Andre in control. The on-screen caption says play-by-play by Gorilla Monsoon, but there is very little play to play here. Although Studd is now busted open. The crowd are baying for Andre in this one. Let it be said. Lots of choking and biting and very little else, but I do like both guys regularly rolling towards the door. That's a nice touch of realism. They're making the escape the point of the match. I liked that. There's still time though for Andre to hit the butt splash off the top rope. That one should be up. Then out of the door goes the big fella. Dan, your thoughts on what we saw here of our opener?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the fact that the escape of the cage was very much sort of seen as the point. It wasn't a case of them sort of not really teasing it and then just staying in the cage to inflict more damage. Although there was a little bit of that, but there was definitely a concerted effort to that the escape was the main reason for the match. It wasn't just to keep people in. It was definitely to get people out, which I don't think we see much in modern cage matches. It seems to be the escape's almost the last thing you want to do in a weird way today.
Yeah, what do you think of the escape rules in general? Because all of the matches on this tape are held under those restrictions. No pinfall attempts. And as you say, it almost seems it's a bit of a relic of the past. But what do you think of those rules in general?
It does. I mean, escape always sort of seemed to be almost like a cowardly way to sort of win a match. So you're running away from your opponent in a weird way, which is in a match which is supposed to be a grudge match. Like the reason you're in a cage is so there's no outside interference or no escape for whoever the possible heel had wronged the face was, that they couldn't run away. So the idea that you'd win by leaving your opponent behind, so to speak, that does kind of seem kind of odd. But then to counteract that, I kind of don't quite like the pinfall rules in cage matches either. I do actually like, being as a child of sort of the early 90s, and that's when I got interested. I do still like the escape to win, but I prefer like the going over the top of the cage sort of way. It seems like it's almost like a ladder match. You're ascending the cage to get out of it, and sort of you're almost beating the cage as well as your opponent in that respect. Rather than exiting the door, seems kind of a bit almost lackluster, unless they do it in some sort of dramatic fashions really.
Yeah, I think climbing out the cage is slightly the more noble way of doing it,
yes,
I would say, than just sauntering out the door. Not that anybody really does that, but the invitation is always there. Whatever your character alignment, whatever your storyline, if you're climbing out of the cage, you are still climbing out of the cage. You've got to go all the way up and all the way down. You can find a way to get out of the door very, very easily, as we will find in one of the matches a bit later on, when you don't even attempt to get out of the door yourself. But yeah, so somebody who really started watching in the mid 90s, and this was the cage match, for me, SummerSlam 94, In Your House 6, SummerSlam 97, just examples off the top of my head. And when the WWF / E really started bringing pinfalls into their cage matches, which we saw a lot of the wrestling 20 years and seeing a lot of now, it did feel a bit jarring to me. Although I do get the reasoning that a lot of people dislike it because they see it as slightly cowardly. I don't really feel that watching this tape though. There's a heel victory a bit later on. I never got the sense that they were winning it without at least putting themselves in the position to be victorious.
There was always a struggle for in each of the matches. It seemed rather than having, like, in this first match, you had like the incredibly big spot of Andre coming off the top to then sort of to basically knock out Big John Studd to win. But there seemed to be like a scramble to get. And to get out of the cage, and it seemed that that was kind of the fight that you were kicking and clawing and scratching your way to get to the door to get out you're almost like leaving your opponent behind in almost like a foot race type way, which is an interesting sort of novel way to win. But the visual we see in all these matches, because as you say, they're all escape rules, I've seen no referee, kind of made it seem like a much different match than say the modern ones now with a referee inside the cage counting the fall or whatever.
Yeah, if I was a referee, would I want to be in there?
Well,
that's the question, you know. But now they do. Okay, they wear their gloves, but there you go. Damn millennials. Anyway, and Andre's butt splash off the top rope. That was, I don't ever remember having seen that before in any way, shape or form. We get to see it again a couple of minutes later, but that's almost worth the admission price alone. And I'd say on any other tape, Andre's butt splash would walk away with our Paws Award for our most striking visual, but you know what's coming very, very shortly. For now, though, let's get this one out of the way. Another Andre match follows against the Ugandan headhunter. It comes from Toronto, which means Bidded Red Lions on commentary. Sadly, not for long, though, as we only get about 2 minutes of this one with the same ending as above. Dan, you can be as brief as they were on this one.
Seeing, as you say, the pretty much exact same finish, big slam, and then sort of flying sort of seated senton or butt splash from the top again, almost kind of put a spoiler on the previous match in a way that goes, oh, is this how Andre had all of his cage matches when he was a face in the sort of early 80s? So, they almost showed it in the wrong way around, really. I would prefer to see the Kamala match first, because that I didn't know of a storyline before that one, where you have those who'd seen the earlier WrestleManias would know the Andre Big John Studd storyline from Mania 1. So I would maybe prefer them to swap it around. If you're going to do a quick, this is Andre in a cage, here's 2 minutes of him beating Kamala, and then go, oh, but then he had a much fiercer match against Big John Studd later, or then show it that way, I don't know.
Yeah, don't get me started on the order of matches on these tapes. the amount of time I've spent talking about that alone. I'm not even a year and a half through this project yet. I'm trying not to mention it ever again, but they pressed my buttons. Maybe I should have done this chronologically. right from the very start. I have not done a single chronological tape in the course of this project. There must be one out there at some point.
Yes, maybe.
You'll notice I'm talking about that rather than the 2 minutes of Andre the Giant versus Kamala that we got from Toronto. I've seen far too much Kamala already on these tapes as well. Bed made lie in. Okay, here's one you might have heard of. It's Don Morocco versus Jimmy Snuka for the IC title from October 1983 in MSG. No? Oh, all right. Again, we join in progress with a bloody Snuka in control. And yes, this stuff is too easy at times, isn't it? Jimmy with a forearm from the second rope, but we are just getting warmed up with that one. My God, this crowd, man. Oh, we are again very close to the finish here, as just after I typed that, Snuka goes for a headbutt, and then Morocco flies out of the door to win. There you go. I must say, though, before I watched this match, I didn't know that was the finish. Because, let's face it, who really cares about the finish? After a suplex, the Superfly goes up to the top of the cage, and little Mickey Foley in attendance thought, yeah, looks like fun. And Dan, that's the moment, which is why I will play it at the end of this recording. And it's very possibly the WWF's first the moment, is it not?
Yes, it must be, yeah, being 83. So it precedes Hogan beating Sheik for the title by a few months. And yeah, I can't think of anything beforehand because even though obviously, as we'll see, there are plenty of videotape from the 70s and before with Bruno and whatnot, there never seemed to be a sort of a big sort of standout sort of flashbulb highlight like this was. And I guess cause that's kind of the sign of the times because maybe at previous then you weren't disposable cameras, I guess, weren't, or cameras in general weren't as readily available and people probably weren't taking them to shows to have that sort of big highlight moment. And yeah, this would have been one that would probably been shown on sort of syndicated TV on the MSG networks. And then, yeah, as you say, replayed at almost ad nauseum. But yeah, it's clearly, it's probably a highlight they've used up until, or Snooker being the persona non grata as he kind of is now. But it's the highlight you'd see sort of up till quite reasonably recently.
Yes, one of those moments that, you know, even now, that's another story, that the WWE will, whenever there's a big cage match, they will always show the footage of this. And you can set your watch by it. It's like every January, the FA Cup third round rolls around and it's, ah, yes, we're going to be seeing Ronnie Radford's goal for Hereford against Newcastle.
Indeed.
It's April, World Snooker Championships. Oh, look, there's Dennis Taylor's winning black from 1985. It's exactly the same sort of thing. You know it's coming every single time, but I'm still never entirely tired of it for the same reason. I could watch that moment over and over again. I wonder how many people, here you go, Dan, until recently, did you know that it wasn't actually part of the match?
I knew it was an after match. I didn't know it was an after match thing, but as with you, I didn't know how the match actually ended. I thought it was possibly some sort of interference or sort of kind of no contest in a way, because, I think I knew it was after the fact, but I thought it had been someone like interfered, then Snooker then got control, sort of overcome a 2-on-1 or something, and then Morocco was left in the ring, and then yeah, hit him with the splash afterwards. I didn't know that, like how that match ended with the fall through the cage and then bringing him back in for the suplex and stuff. No, that bit I didn't know at all.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why the finish discovered by us both for the first time just watching this tape. Not quite as iconic, I think it's probably fair to say.
No.
Just imagine if that was the one they constantly repeated on the Then Now Forever video. From Morocco falling out of the cage after a Jimmy Snooker headbutt. I suppose if you wanted to get meta about it, if they wanted to show a Jimmy Snooker moment, that could be the one, but no. I'm trying to separate the man from the moment, but it is very hard. And the way that the WWE, when Jimmy Snooker passed on, the response was they knew what they were doing and I didn't like it. But anyway, whatever happens, we will always have this. The highlight of this tape, one of the highlights of any tape, let's be honest, always one of the WWF/E's highlights. And where it all began, it's probably not too fanciful to say that the rock and wrestling era began here. This was a symbol of something that pro wrestling could be, that you didn't need knowledge of holds, didn't need knowledge of arenas, didn't need knowledge of wrestlers. One moment of this guy flying off the top of the steel cage, and after 38 years, we shouldn't say this, but it seems incredibly tame now, but it still maintains a power all of its own, and I think it always will.
Yeah, it's a sort of a brilliant visual. The camera sort of cut to Jimmy Snooker standing perfectly on top of the cage, doing the pose, and then hitting the splash. I mean, if this was the day, it would be one of the ones you'd probably see on sports sort of clip shows outside of wrestling. It would be one they'd show elsewhere. I don't really know much about that, but at the time, but it could be one that made it onto ESPN and other places like that, and then got a little bit of popularity around wrestling. That, as you say, probably started that movement towards WrestleMania less than around 2 years later.
Makes you think, it really does. Also, I loved the slow motion replay we got.
Yes.
And they ground it right down and they stopped it just as Snuka was about to land. Masterful. I don't know who was... I think it might have been a Kerwin Silphy's job there, perhaps?
Possibly, yeah.
The camera stayed in one place, so it wasn't our friend Bucky Beaver. Although even he was lurking around 1983, nibbling his way through, so... But the hallmarks weren't quite there at this point, yeah. What a visual. Just close your eyes and you can see it. And you can almost forget everything else. Like Gorilla shills the most unusual matches tape, and yes, I'll get there one day, then throws us to an incredible sounding tag team steel cage match. A tag team steel cage match? Huh, like that sort of thing is going to last. Pitting Randy Savage and Adrian Adonis versus Tito Santana and Bruno Sammartino. This one is wild, with everybody bringing it, and Bruno very much included, but then he is in there with a piece of slime. Here he runs across the ring, sort of, to stop from climbing out. The action is impossible to call, but it's definitely not impossible to watch. This is insanity, and I love every bit of it. Adrian takes a terrible blow to the groins, according to Alfred. Savage and Tito trade some big blows in the middle of the ring, whilst Adonis tears up the steps to save himself. I should say the steps weren't steel. He's not Jeff Capes. Topical reference. Everyone bar Bruno is bleeding buckets here as Adonis misses a splash off the top. Not everyone can do it. Everybody brawls in the corner until Savage gets nailed and lands on top of Adrian. This allows Bruno to bolt, again, sort of, to the door, and Tito climbs out and over to a ginormous pop. Dan, probably just as well I eschewed normal play-by-play for this one, because the RSI, you know, it would have been worth it. Maybe I should have done. But maybe let the action speak for itself. What were your thoughts on this crazy, crazy match?
Oh, yeah, it was a sort of all-out brawl and really exciting and kind of the peak of the Santana-Savage rivalry, and what a great way to sort of add in Bruno and Adrian Adonis, who, yeah, didn't feel out of place, either of them, in this match at all. And, yeah, I don't think you could have gone move by move, because even the camera sort of missed a few moves here and there, trying to cut between sort of the two different pairings going at it. But yeah, I'm glad this was the first full match we had on the tape. This was no in progress for this one. I'm glad we got the whole match, really, because yeah, we were treated to a good sort of, was it about sort of 6-7 minutes or so of pretty fast paced action sort of throughout. It never really sort of let up. There were no sort of rest periods. Even like all the escapes seemed sort of frantic and really important sort of throughout. And my only sort of reservation before this sort of seeing the match card was, oh, a tag team match, how are they going to get around the escapes? Because I think with some, I say modern, but you'd get the ones you'd in sort of around the Attitude Era where you'd have one part of the team come out of the cage, but then you'd be left with a 2-on-1. So the logic was kind of lost on it. But the way they did this with the sort of knocking both Savage and Adonis down at the same time, Tito going over the top and Bruno through the door to sort of double escape at the exact same time, fit perfectly. And I think that's probably the best way you could probably end these tag cage matches.
We can forgive Bruno going through the door, can't we?
Of course, yes. That makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
We'd possibly still be there now if the Avenger of Earth, bless him. My goodness me, he brought it in this one.
Oh, yeah.
With the strength and valour of a man half his age, I think we are duty-bound to say. This was madness in the best possible way. Every time I nipped down to my laptop just to make a note, I just heard the crowd getting louder and louder. Hearing the punches and the kicks and the slams. There wasn't a shred of resting in this match. They all managed to pair off against each other, every possible combination, and they filled every second. I think it did come in at less than 10 minutes, but it felt like twice the length, and that is the highest compliment I can pay it. There was so much going on here. I did feel watching it that Savage and Tito were controlling the action, although Adonis is no slouch, and Bruno will always be Bruno, but everybody brought their equivalent of an A game for this one. And it's another one which makes you realize the importance of the MSG network at this time for those who were able to acquire it, because this is a huge match, and both of these teams, even if you go back and you know your history, including Tito and Adonis, they had a few battles as well. Obviously, the big one at this point is Bruno and Savage, but didn't feel remotely thrown together. The hatred was there. It was viable. Everybody who bled, bled for a reason. It was the right side of violence. I mean, Savage's blade job at the end when he was carried away. Holy moly. There's not much he did leave in the ring there. Or maybe he did, depending on how you want to look at it. Yeah, this was crazy, 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 crazy stuff. How many times I want to say crazy? Not enough, quite simply. First recommendation on this tape, and one very possibly we will be talking about again a bit later, and a tag team steel cage match with nary a gimmicked boot in sight. Again, I just don't stop. Now up is just a few minutes of highlights, as they say, of Tito against Valentine in their final battle for the IC title. Johnny V is also angry that we only get highlights, but possibly for different reasons than I. Apparently, this match is shown in full on the Grudge Match VHS, and yes, it's on my list. Give me practice to say it, Grudge Match. So let's go straight to the finish here, as they do. Both men climb the cage, but Valentine gets punched down between the apron and cage. For good measure, Tito then kicks the open door in his face, then jumps down to reclaim the IC title. Greg, though, destroys the belt afterwards. What will they do now? Dan, again, unfortunately, not much to talk about here. But I like what we did get.
It was a quicker pace than it kept up with the quick pace that we had in the tag match. But yeah, as you say, we only got the last few moments of it. But you could tell it was like a feud ender that, and again, if you know the history of the back and forth of the Intercontinental title at the time, you could see that this was going to be the last match. And I think that's sort of traditionally how you'd end a feud would be with Kedris. As you say, it's on a compilation called Grudge Matches. So yeah, when you come to that, I expect, yeah, you'll be able to see this in full, you'd hope, on that one. But yeah, for what we saw, enjoyable, and kind of a good way to end the match with the sort of almost double escape, but then the Santana cutting off Valentine escaping the door, kind of using the door as a weapon, which I think we obviously saw a lot more of through the Attitude Era. But yeah, to see it being used that early on was kind of good, with the sort of quick escape afterwards.
I will save my thoughts on this one for when I get to the Grudge Match tape.
Yeah.
So let's go to the oldest match I've covered in the course of this project. Very possibly the oldest match anybody has ever covered in the course of any pro wrestling project, as we go back to July 1970. So grab yourself a can of Party 7 and turn off Nationwide for now. But don't worry, I'll let you get back in time for close down. Let's see what we've got. Bruno defending against George Steele in Philadelphia. And despite it being 1970, yes, I did try to pick out Hat Guy in the front row. I bet he was there somewhere. The footage here is film/Super 8 quality, but I'm certainly not going to complain about that here. If anything, Bruno is a bit less lithe around the ring than he was in the match from 16 years later. Lots of obvious clipping here, and I don't just mean what Steele does to the turnbuckle pad. Sammartino does a very good job of the I have just been blinded punch. We get a lot more of this than I thought we would, actually, and it ends really rather placidly indeed, as he just rams Steele into the ring and then saunters out. See? I told you. Can we call that one a curfew win? Dan, definitely one from the archivists here, and I was very thankful for that, but that's pretty much all there is to really recommend this one.
Yeah, I mean, visually, it looked quite good. I feel, as you say, with the sort of filmic style and stuff of the time, and I like the cage as well. I like that sort of more sort of fencing type cage rather than the sort of chicken wire that was what we saw throughout the rest of the video. Having that sort of different type of fencing sort of for the cage kind of made it stand out a bit more as well. But yeah, from what we saw, it was good. But yeah, it was a bit of a no. That was kind of the first match without a big sort of finish in the way. It was just, as you say, George Steele getting kind of knocked out on the turnbuckle, and then Bruno signals to the door and then sort of waves goodbye as he leaves.
Ever the gentleman. But if Bruno signals for the door, you're going to open it, aren't you? Especially in 1970.
Well, yeah, exactly. But no, I enjoyed the visual to me. It looked really nice. So yeah, I don't think you'll see many matches from that time period again, because I'm not sure how many were sort of kept and put onto release onto video, but yeah, very nice sort of pleasant surprise to see it there.
Yeah, it's fantastic to see something like this. It really was. The oldest match I've done before was on Villains of the Squared Circle. Sorry for bringing that one up, Ben, if you're listening. Which was, I think that was George Steele again versus Gorilla Monsoon from 1973. But going back to the turn of the decade, really well-preserved footage, as I say. Super 8 quality, but all the better for that. It almost made it seem like a real journey back through time. And I think it would have done that as well if you were watching this for the first time in 1986. When you're used to the bars and the lines and people who know far more about creating television pictures than I do. And this grainy but clear, that will make sense if you see it, film footage of a match. It does make you wonder as well how much of the rest of this card is actually preserved. Might well exist in what we used to call Titan Tower somewhere. I bet there's somebody listening who could tell me some of the other matches on this card and where I could find them. Kelly Nelson's listening, he would definitely be aware. But yeah, there's very little to talk about the match other than George Steele was still doing the turnbuckle thing in 1970.
Yeah.
That was, I think, we were just treated to it at WrestleMania 2 and WrestleMania 2 only, but no. Bit of a shtick for old Georgie boy. And I suppose it was good to get a classic Bruno Sammartino win on this tape too. But, see, Bruno is somebody I've never done a deep dive into. I've always wanted to. I suppose this tape does help me some part of the way. And there is the Bruno Sammartino, I think it's called Living Legend tape, as you would expect, which is also on the network. So it's going to be on my list. But it's really hard to judge him from an in-ring perspective. The style is anathema to where we are now. It's universes apart, let alone poles. But when I do watch any Bruno match on here, especially this one when he's in his pomp, you really can feel it, can you know why this man had the special connection. And even in this time, I'd say it went beyond pro wrestling for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. You can see that as the every man sort of, everyone wants to, knows Bruno, knows the name. I reckon if you sort of spoke to people in the Philadelphia and sort of New York areas at the time, even if they weren't massively into pro wrestling, you say the name Bruno Sammartino and go, oh yeah, he's the wrestler, as you would do in the 80s when someone said Hulk Hogan, or possibly now to a point with John Cena. But yes, he was definitely sort of the face of professional wrestling, more so than anyone else at that time, and for a long time as well. I mean, I say this was 1970, but he was a star for a good sort of 10 years previous, and then a 10 years going forward. Well, more than 10 years, as we see his matches into 86 and so.
And here he comes again. Now he's up against Roddy Piper in early 1986. This match came about after Piper called Bruno. You know the story of that one. Piper rubs it into the Boston crowd by wearing a Chicago Bulls t-shirt. Apparently, the latter beat the former in the Super Bowl tournament series the previous week. Not my field of expertise, as I'm sure you worked out. My word, do this crowd love Bruno. Piper is busted open inside the first minute, and then a poster of William Perry gets stuffed down Roddy's throat. I know who that is. The fans are in attendance, and they are just here for all of this. They really, really are. Even the scoreboard is cheering for Bruno. You know what I mean if you see it. They both use the shirt as a weapon, and this one is hard fought, capital letters. They tease a lot of finishes here, and the timing is really good throughout, to the point where I forgive Piper for doing the na-na-na-na thing with his nose. I wasn't meant to sing all the line there. I missed the nah. Nah, 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 nah. There you go. Maintain decorum, everybody. Yeah, somebody doing that with their nose. It's a real audience of one. Ah, sorry. I'm a bit early for that in 1986. Or am I? Anyway, Bruno crawls out and grabs a wooden chair, which he uses to complete his quest and go 3 for 3 on this tape. Best of all, though, Gorilla manages to get in a bent out of shape before we fade out. So I am a happy bunny indeed. Dan, another one where they went for it, and we got it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You could tell that, I mean, as I mentioned before, that the cage match was clearly set up to end feuds, basically. And, yeah, there was no sort of let-up at all. This just sort of full-on, straight from the get-go, with both of them sort of brawling sort of constantly throughout. And interestingly, sort of, you could then see Bruno kind of a little bit sort of heelish there with a few sort of low blows and a bit of the sort of dirty style. But then that kind of told the story of Piper clearly got to him, and this was him sort of enacting his revenge in a way. The blade drop from Piper was the most blatant one I've seen in quite some time. He basically stood in the middle of the ring and wiped his forehead. Instantly there was a Crimson Mask. It's like, oh, come on, there's no one not seeing that. But there we go. But yeah, no, I enjoyed this one. Nice, as you say, didn't let up at all, fast paced. And I think, yeah, I mean, if you're in that crowd sort of red hot for it, they probably could have gone. I mean, maybe Bruno probably couldn't have gone another sort of 10 minutes, but I mean, no one would be upset if they did. I think they could have had them in the palm of their hands for much longer because Bruno didn't really get beaten down too much in this match, but you could have easily had it. So Piper was on top for a good portion of the match, and then Bruno was just about getting there to grab Piper from escaping, and then eventually, yeah, Bruno sort of fights back and then gets the win with the escape. But yeah, really good and sort of very different to sort of see Bruno sort of fighting in a sort of brawling style, where before the few matches I have seen sort of before this tape were sort of the very traditional sort of wrestling style as was from the 70s and before.
Yeah, that blade job, oh dear. It's probably just as well that John Stossel got everything he needed to the year before, really, isn't it? And he didn't bother to stick around. I doubt he was in the rabid crowd for this one. I think he would have been saying something. But it's Roddy Piper in the mid-80s. I'm going to forgive him this time. Yeah, seeing Bruno getting down and dirty after the arm behind the back gentleman that he was in the match in 1970, and now he's here just going for it. Again, when you know the build-up, you can understand why. But it was very refreshing to see for somebody like me going in again. This is the problem when you're going with preordained impressions of somebody, and just seeing Bruno mixing it up on the mat and just laying it in big time in 1986 is quite something. Let's compare this Bruno to the one they have toddle out at the Battle Royal just a couple of months later at WrestleMania 2. And he's just not at the races, doesn't get much of anything in that one, is eliminated without a whole lot of fanfare for somebody of his, well, talk about his stature, what a way to undersell it, Bruno Sammartino's stature, for God's sake, you know what I'm talking about here. But he seemed to be enjoying this one as well, and everybody was. Piper showed ass for him. It was pretty, actually, rather one-sided when you think about it. I mean, he was into him, was Bruno, right from the bell. Any pausing whatsoever. I can only remember about 1 minute's worth of Piper offense, probably in the third quarter of this one. And I liked that Bruno wasn't above just grabbing a wooden chair and smacking him with it. That one must have hurt, I tell you what. I can see why they phased the wooden chairs out. I'll give him that one. Even though he was leaning back and didn't actually make a whole lot of contact with that one, he probably didn't need to either. I wouldn't fancy a bit of timber to the schnoz. Bruno's on form on this one, isn't he? 3 for 3.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. And but three sort of kind of different matches as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Unlike the start we had with the two sort of Andre matches, we've seen sort of three sort of very different sides to Bruno from the sort of the hero champion from the 1970s with the match against George Steele, the sort of kind of fast paced mixing up tag match where he sort of fought with sort of Savage and Adonis, and then this one where it's just basically a caged brawl, really.
Very, very strong stuff indeed. We head back to September 1979 for our next match, and it's world champion Bob Backlund versus IC champion Pat Patterson. Vince is on commentary here, so I remain a happy bunny. Hard to get him back in. Very nice. They trade a lot of escapes in this one, even more than in our previous encounter. They have one gripping battle on the top of a cage in particular, which really sells the drama that Patterson could just sneak away with it. Vince gives us a sensing victory on commentary. Ah, best of all, and please say I didn't mishear this, he calls Bob Backlund a gallant lad.
Yes.
Oh, yes, I was right. That really should have stuck. That should have become a Vince classic, along with notwithstanding and then from there and seesaw matchup back and forth. I mean, just think about Vince saying it in the future. Yeah, Sammy Omega, he's a gallant lad, King. I hope they've just mic'd the cage well here, because each bump makes an almighty racket. It better not be bones. The atomic drop of doom should be enough to get the victory for Howdy Doody, but Patterson catches him on top of the cage with brass knucks. Rip-roaring slugfest up there, but it's still won by Backlund, and then he just kicks Pat out of the way and slides out of the door to win. What a motherfuckers. Damn.
Yeah, I've just written here, so very grueling contest, especially to following the match we just had with Bruno and Piper. This kind of up the notch yet again. This is a bit of a longer match, a bit more back and forth in it, rather than the one-sided match we just saw. Yeah, very interesting. Good way to, they used the cage quite well with the sort of climbing up and basking on top of it. We saw that a little bit in the tag match, but again, they showed a bit more of it here. I know going back in time, but they showed more of it here with the various sort of attempt to escape. They, even though it did finish with the backman escaping through the door, sort of kicking Patterson away and scrambling out. They were sort of very teasing the climb of the cage quite frequently, almost to start off with. I think Patterson was up there quite often because, again, I guess they're telling the story of Patterson wants the world title, so he's going to try and run out as quick as possible. But, you know, yeah, really, I enjoyed this one. Yeah, so, as I said, there's a lot of back and forth, plenty to see going on. And, yeah, I think if it had just been a match, a standard match, you probably would have seen more sort of rest holds and a sort of more deliberate type of pace to the match. But no, this was sort of pretty fast paced for who was involved.
Yeah, the pace was the best thing about this one. They really managed to keep it hot throughout the 10 to 12 minutes. Can't have been easy because, again, there's a lot going on, especially with not one but two battles on the top of the cage. And to keep the pace in the ring enough to, when they get to the top of the cage, to, as I say, really sell the drama, that's something that only the very finest professionals can do. And these two more than fall into that category. You could probably tell by the way my notes were structured. After he hit the atomic drop, Bob Backlund, I thought that was going to be it. But we still got another minute and a half with another two false finishes. I suppose we shouldn't really be surprised that a match with Pat Patterson in has so much thought put into the finish. It's good to see him be involved for a change rather than passing the glory on to somebody else. I love that Bob really just slid out of the ring as if this was his one and only opportunity to do so. The timing was excellent. It's one of my problems with modern day ladder matches is you can see that they've thought about the timing to the point where that isn't a positive thing. It should be. And but no, Sean Ray's WrestleMania 10, for example, it is. But it just feels a little bit too over-egged rather than planned necessarily. There's a big difference in pro wrestling between the two. Maybe that's something I can do a deep dive discussion on one day on another podcast. But they put the thought into it, but not to the point where it felt in any way contrived. And this is something from 1979, for crying out loud. But it had to feel natural because that's how you get the crowd on Backlund's side, because that was a very real possibility. And if you're watching this match for the first time, the way they played it, especially in the early part, you could see Patterson winning this and becoming a dual champion. I just love the fact that he went straight for the door right at the very start. I'm a stickler for realistic spots like that. Again, no surprise that Patterson's the man involved. Yeah, such a smartly put together match by two of the very best in the business. And world champion Bob Backlund, the first time, got a little bit more material to work with than we have Bob Backlund, second time champion, is something I'm really fascinated by. There's a match he has with Hogan. I think it's on the Hogan unreleased set from Philadelphia from 1980. It's about 30 minutes. And I'll tell you what, if you didn't think Hogan could get it done on the mat, understandably so it might be, then check that one out. There's a great hour-long match he has with Greg Valentine back then as well around this time. Again, it needs to be your style if you're a real fan of the style that we saw in the cage match that I've nearly mentioned two or three times already that took place last month, then you might need a little bit of G'ing up to really enjoy a Bob Backlund match from the late 70s, early 80s. But it's what I want down pat, and pun intended here. He's one of the very best of all time, and I'm very happy to say that I'll go to my grave. Bob Backlund, one of the best of all time. Yeah, we undertake... Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go on.
I say, yeah, definitely. You can kind of see why he was sort of the sort of poster boy and for so long, because I've seen a few sort of different Backlund matches, and he was seemingly the man who could have a match with anybody, and seemingly now we're seeing this cage match in any kind of style, really. So he was like the very much the dependable and go-to person. And kind of Patterson was that on the sort of heel side. He was like your the go-to heel, hence why he was probably why he was the Intercontinental Champion, like the first one, albeit a non-sort of a fictional tournament. But he was seen as like one of the sort of poster boys, albeit on the heel side. So yeah, this match kind of made sense, and yeah, the fans were into it because they were seeing two of the names out of the time going at it. I mean, probably kind of rare you'd get a champion versus champion match at the time.
Yes, again, that's what I mean. We're watching this stuff for the first time in 1979. That would have been unheard of, obviously, because the IC Championship wasn't a thing until that tournament in Rio de Janeiro. Wink, nudge, nudge. I hope somebody one day, if they haven't already, actually draws up a fictional bracket for that. No, there's one somewhere. But yeah, seeing the world champion against the IC champion early on, that's how to make the Intercontinental title look important. And look what it is now. We end the tape with a match that you should also be very familiar with. It's the main event of WrestleMania 2, or depending on what order you've got to see it, All In Live. Hulk Hogan defending the world title against King Kong Bundy. Off note, this is the only match on the tape to take place within the confines of the dreaded Blue Bars. We don't get this one in... Congratulations to Alvaro, by the way. Oh, and Jesse does a very good job at handling the play-by-play here. Anyway, Hogan wins LOL. Dan.
Yeah, I think I'm not presuming so everyone's watched everything as much as maybe you and I have, but I think most people probably have seen this match from Romania 2. And it was before the sort of malaise of Hogan set in sort of a few years later, so the crowd was still up for it and everyone was sort of still sort of cheering Hogan on. And it wasn't the sort of formulaic sort of Hogan match. I mean, yes, he did get beaten down there and sort of come back, but there were sort of small parts of that match that you could sort of see that Bundy was a credible threat. I mean, he had injured Hogan beforehand. Hogan was kind of a bit injured in the match, so there was enough sort of going on. And yeah, I remember sort of watching this match sort of in full when I had gone through and watched the WrestleMania sort of for the first sort of time. And I reasonably sort of enjoyed it. I think it's one of the best sort of Hogan matches in a way, because there kind of was this actual bit of peril to it. I mean, yeah, the highlights we got were just basically, yeah, as you say, the Hogan comeback and then Hogan beating up Heenan, which did make me smile, because then you got the bit with Ventura berating Hogan for why does he need to do this for. But that's always nice to see Jesse attacking Hogan on commentary. So that made me smile a bit. But yeah, it was a nice way. I guess because this was out in 86, so that this was the cage match from 86, the main one. So I guess that's why you'd end the tape with that. But yeah, not too bad seeing it again, to be honest. But luckily, we didn't really need to see all of it. So no, we saw what we needed to see.
And it does exist on one of the Hogan tapes, I think that is. Well, have I already talked about it? I feel like I have. I probably have. I feel like I've talked about this match so many times. I haven't talked about it on wrestling 20 years ago. There we go. Well, we didn't get started in 2006, so I haven't talked about it there. I've definitely discussed this match somewhere. That's the problem when you're a podcast legend, it all blends into one big, huge, wonderful podcast for you, everybody. Yes. A non-Hogan formula, Hogan formula match. Let's settle for that now, shall we, before we dish out some awards. Yeah. Because it ends the tape again, very, very quickly, complete with special thanks to Vince McMahon at the end. That one always raises a smile. But Dan, what do you think of this tape in general? Let's break it down. So, first off, what is our rewind moment, our best match?
For me, I would say it was the tag match. I think that
agreed.
It's the only tag match we have on here, and as I said before, my sort of preconceived thoughts of tag team cage matches, outside of the one a few weeks ago, of course, is they're hard to sort of book, and how do you get over the escape rule and things like that, and they can sometimes be a little bit sort of clunky having all four in the ring at once. But no, this was a very pleasant surprise, and it wasn't the case of Bruno and Adrian Adonis being sort of third and fourth wheels. They were very much involved with everything in the match, and it wasn't just Santana and Savage going through their sort of showing off their high flying and things like that. The whole match was, I say, fast paced throughout, and yeah, happy could watch that again.
20 minutes worth of action in a sub 10 minute match definitely takes top honours for me. This one's going to be interesting. What's our fast forward, our worst match on the tape? Difficult one to pick, really, because there's so much clipping around.
Yeah, having so much sort of in match in progresses and stuff. But I guess Andre Kamara, because as you said, we've just literally seen the same finish in a better presented match beforehand, and there was nothing was gained from watching that, really, I didn't think.
Yeah, 2 for 2. We saw it all better in the previous match anyway. This one's going to be a bit of a no-brainer, I think. What's our pause, the most striking visual? Oh, do you want a bit of time to think about this one?
No, I think we mentioned it quite clearly at the time, and yes, seeing the snooker splash again with the slow-mo replay as well. So that's something we can happily watch again and again, as we both mentioned. If I was going to pick anything outside of that, like if for some reason that match wasn't on here, probably sort of the battle, as you mentioned, with Patterson and Backlund both astride the top of the cage, Backlund avoiding the brass knuckles and sort of fighting his way out of that, I think was quite a visual to see Backlund astride the cage, basically.
For me, the easiest pick we've ever had in the course of this project. I'm not sure we're all sat here now if that doesn't happen.
True.
I know this one's going to be interesting. Who's our video star, our MVP of the tape?
For me, Bruno.
Yeah, got to be,
we only saw the highlights of him and Steele, but two matches we saw of him. And as I said at the time, all very different matches, but Bruno being Bruno throughout, sort of kind of he almost outshone everyone, even when he wasn't the main attraction in the tag match. Seeing him in the cage with those other people, it was amazing to see him sort of keep up with everyone. And as it was sort of very much towards the end of his career, it didn't really feel that way.
No, he stood alongside them and then some. Seeing such a range as well. 1970 all the way up to the mid 80s, and yeah, I think I might have to bump the Bruno Sammartino tape up the list a little bit after that one. Deserved winner of the video star. So now to our final award consensus so far, but Dan, overall thoughts on the tape. So inside the steel cage, is it a buy, i.e. one of the very best? Is it a rent, as in pretty good? Is it a bargain bin, as in nah, okay? Or is it a wipe, as in a wipe? Where are we going?
I think it's a rent. I think it's one I would have and one I would watch more than once. Probably not all the way through, because I wouldn't actually need to see Hogan Bundy again. But to see, mainly to see that sort of basically half an hour slot of Bruno we got. But virtually back to back, barring the Valentine Santana highlights in the middle, we got a good solid half an hour there of Bruno plus the Backlund Patterson match. So yeah, it's that. I think that part of the tape I would definitely sort of watch back again multiple times as well. Yeah, not the best match, not the best of the videos, because there was so much in progress, and so we didn't really get to see sort of a lot to it, but there was enough in there that I would want to watch a decent portion of it again.
In a way, I think this tape was helped by the clippings, because if we'd had all the four matches of those, A, the tape would have been longer, would have been pushing about 2 hours, which is not going to happen in the short play days of 1986 video. But furthermore, I think it would have been rather harder to get through, because this one could have suffered the malaise of repetitiveness, couldn't it? I mean, even this was only 1 hour 24, I must be honest, I actually watched this in two sittings in about 2 40-minute bursts, just to keep it fair and make sure that I treated the second half the same as I did the first. I still think I would have done anyway, because there was so much to enjoy in the second 40 minutes, but I just didn't want to take that risk of burnout, you know. And that's probably the one caveat you need to go in if you are going to fire up this tape on the network. It is only 84 minutes in total, but especially if cage matches aren't absolutely your thing, you might want to get up and walk around the room a little bit yourself, and, well, unless you feel like you are enclosed in one whilst watching 84. But yes, I'm going to go for a very solid rent on here. Enough variety within the confines of the steel cage, pun intended. Lots of different matches, lots of different endings, lots of different people involved, lots of different importance of matches as well. You had grudges being settled, you had big title matches, you had the big names against fellow big names. I really think this was a well put together take. Not even back to 1970 on a match. No, that doesn't happen every day. So for me, this is a very, very strong rent. Again, a bit of a, your mileage may vary on where cage matches really stand for you in the pantheon of gimmicks, but if you are a bit of a fan of them, then you could do far, far worse than this one. So a good solid rent for Inside the Steel Cage. Which brings us to the end of another edition of Seeing Your Video. Dan, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much for inviting me back. Yeah, it's been good to see a video that I hadn't seen before, and matches and stuff I was had, like I say, not seen and hadn't very little sort of exposure to. Like I said, I've seen a few Bruno matches, seen a few background matches, but not seen these ones and not sort of seen them in these sort of settings before. So yeah, very, very grateful to sort of be able to sit down and watch that, go through that today.
When I have you back on, it is your pick again though, so there we are. You can spring one on me next time.
Okay, I'll see what I can find. But I am sort of tempted to sort of stick in that era rather than go with the familiar early 90s. I think this may have sort of persuaded me to sort of step out of the comfort zone and seek something a bit older. Yes. Cause you never know, we might find something else from pre-Hogan era.
There are a lot of tapes from this era that have made it onto the network, I'm pleased to say, so. Much more to discover, I think, which I'm looking forward to. I'm back in the 90s next month, but don't blame me for that one. But Dan, you have something else going on. In addition to being a regular guest on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, on the same network feed, you have your own thing going on. Why don't you tell the listeners what that might be?
Yes. I'm part of a podcast called the Indie Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, where now that there's only one big company left 20 years ago, following the fall of WCW and ECW, there's a bit of a vacuum. So myself, Billy Johnson and Adam Joyce have decided to embark on the endeavour of finding wrestling outside of the WWF from 20 years ago and see what was going on, who was where, what promotions are starting up, sort of where are the names that didn't appear as part of the invasion. And yeah, we've been going for the past sort of few months now, and yeah, we've picked up a few sort of gems here and there along the way, as well as sort of seeing some familiar faces, either ex-CCW stars and stuff, or those who will become familiar faces. Like I think we've covered AJ Styles amongst others already, and we've got more of those to come in the next sort of few months. So it's been an interesting project to get involved with over the past few months, and one that we're looking forward to bringing you more of each month alongside your regular Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast.
Yes, that's four episodes you've done so far of the Indie 20 Years Ago podcast, with episode 5 should be landing not long after you hear this one. Let's talk about discovering new things on this project, the Indie 20 Years Ago podcast. I mean, independent wrestling from 2001. Me, are you kidding me? But such a world out there. Familiar faces, people we now know extremely well, people we never got to know, people maybe we should have got to know, and Barbarian and Tony Atlas as well. Is that not right, Dan?
Match of the year, I tell you.
What have you done? You know, all of the greats we've seen over the past four episodes, but it's Barbarian versus Tony Atlas from episode 2 that always comes to mind first.
It's going to take a thing. I don't think I can sort of muster up two legends like that again. I've seen a few things here and there that are on the horizon. I hope so. Yeah, who knows where we're gonna go?
Setting the bar very, very high. Yeah, fantastic. Listen, the Indie 20 Years Ago podcast. Do check it out on our Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast network feed, where you can find the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. Later shows dropped September 2001, where I'm on with Pete Kimber and Bob Colling. We look at the Unforgiven pay-per-view, Kurt Angle's title win, and where the invasion angle might be going. Just think we've only got 2 more months of it to go. Oh, what a shame. Also here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, you can hear me with Callum McDougall and Ben Locke every month on the Special Relations, where we just talk all sorts of shite for 2.5 hours, quite frankly. And the two of them will be guests on this show for our Christmas special, so watch out for that. But for now, Dan, one more time, thank you for joining me today, sir.
Thank you very much.
I will catch you all next month, but for now, inside the steel cage, I have seen your video.
Even though the match is terminated, the Superfly says, as far as I'm concerned, it's not over. He's climbing.